Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. And the link will be posted in the chat. The opportunities, the opinions, excuse me, expressed here are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. I'd like to welcome Pamela J., a compulsive overeater from Indiana. Welcome, Pamela.
Sorry. Now can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. Okay. I know that it's never easy, really easy, to get to a meeting, and today has been a challenge. So I'm really trying to compose myself, and this is the first time I've ever done this. So grace, grace, and more grace, right? Right beforehand, the mic wouldn't work, or the video wouldn't work. So we're good now. Okay. Well, you already know who I am and where I'm from. And yeah, I'm gratefully recovered from compulsive overeating. I know that we have about 30 minutes. And Colleen, if I get going like halfway through, just remind me I'm halfway, okay? Even though I see it, I don't know where I'm going to be, my brain, you know. I kept thinking there's really only one purpose that I'm here for, you know, and it is to share my experience and bring hope. Because there's always going to be somebody in the room that needs one of our stories, right? We don't always relate to everything, but because we all come from the same cloth, so to speak, we'll relate to something. So I know that I remember when I first started coming in the room and the language was so foreign, you know, but I loved hearing that we were here to share experience, strength, and hope. And hope is a powerful thing, right? By the time we end up in these rooms, we may feel like we don't have any or we have very little, and we all have a different story and experience. We need each other. And that is how we live out the 12th step. And honestly, that's the reason why I said yes. It was time. I share it one-on-one with people, but I've never shared in a meeting like this. So I was a little nervous, and when I got that phone call, I thought, I can't say no. How many people have done it, and I benefited, right? So we have to try to say yes. So the 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual experience as a result of this course of action. This thing is a little bit tight. Hold on a second. I had it set up and then, you know. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, we'll say, food addicts, and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. So before I go any further, I'm going to pray a prayer that I've prayed many times with my sponsor, and I pray to a higher power that I refer to as God. And many of you, I'm sure, know it. It's called the Set Aside Prayer. Dear God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, about this disease, the 12 steps, and especially you, dear God, so that I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me to see the truth. Amen. Okay. That's a big thing to come in and not come in with expectations and think we already have the answers. And even the solution. So often we start with our childhood, right? And I'm only going to start there because I think I need to, say a little bit of what my story is. Somebody else might relate to. And I come from a home with two good people. They were good parents, but they were not good together. The marriage thing was not good. I was an only child, and although I felt loved by them separately, together it was a volatile place at times. They argued about everything, except for me. And I spent many nights crying myself to sleep. I was fearful of divorce. I was taken downstairs, to get my suitcase packed, and the things that little kids, like the fear was instilled, right? And what do we struggle with, many of us? The fears. And we moved when I was two, from Kalamazoo, Michigan, to the south suburbs of Chicago. And that's when I left my grandparents, my uncles, all that stability, my aunts, my cousins, they were my family. I was, a lot of good things happened when we moved too. I did acquire a lot of like surrogate grandparents, wonderful people I still remember. I am 62 now, and I still remember all those wonderful older men and women that took me in and loved me unconditionally. I always had a tribe, in other words, but yet I always felt alone. It's not familiar to anybody. I realized that I also had special foods. And this journey I started with healing, like, I don't know, 20 years ago, I started noticing things like I had foods attached to those people when I would think of them. I would just be conversing and saying, but this one loved me and this one, cared about me or whatever. And I was dealing with a lot of grief and loss. And I realized I have food attached to them. Like this one made me this and this one made me that. It made me happy to think about. And it was my first, I remember that was like the first time I kind of thought, I think I have a problem. but I didn't understand what that meant. The thing about it for me was, I was always thin. So when I'm in the rooms and I hear a lot of people talking about they were overweight as children and stuff like that, that wasn't my story. And, I've met people from high school since then, and they always thought, well, you were always thin, but you can be thin and still eat it while there's a decent metabolism. It actually helped mask the problem. So even though I was thin when I was really a child, or like junior high and stuff, it comes on later. I remember like it being like a big thing, like. Oh, she like they were proud, like my dad, like she eats like a man. What is that? I don't understand still. But in other words, they thought I was a healthy eater and I would eat huge plates of spaghetti, two or three of them, and big Kaiser rolls, they were called, and milk, all the things I would do like excessive amount. But it seemed to make everybody happy, like it was good because I was thin. So see, that followed me, right? So I was used to eating that way. All the things that kids wanted to do, things like that. But I can look back in this journey now and realize there were times when I was really upset. I had friends that's how they, young friends, kids, that's how we coped. We were always eating. We were always doing something. So I didn't think about all that until later in life and started realizing, because my story always was, well, I just love food and I like to celebrate with food and I like to have, family time was around food and everything was around food. And food isn't bad for people that don't have a problem, right? But I didn't really understand why I was starting to gain weight. And when I would lose the weight, I could never keep it off. You know the story, right? I never related to comfort food. That phrase really wasn't my thing. However, those foods I had connected to people, they made me happy. And when I wanted to remember them, I ate those special foods. And there was a lot of loss. So when they would pass away, when they would die, or people would leave, right? They would just, in my little kid brain, they disappeared. Well, they were in hospitals, they had strokes, things happened I didn't understand. And so I wanted to remember them, so I would eat. As I got into my teens, I expanded my choices of coping. I'm sure you can get that one too, right? I suddenly found out that alcohol made me relax. And I would babysit and eat all the food they had, and they would say you could have this, but I'm not sure they want to eat the entire bag of little fun size bars, right? And I couldn't stop. So those memories, as I've gone through the program, come back to me like I really was a compulsive overeater. I couldn't eat just one of something at times, right? So The alcohol thing made me less uptight is the word I think I would actually use. I realized at some point in my life that I was always the last one to leave, and I never left anything unfinished. So I've also thought in the years since I really could have been an alcoholic as well. And things changed that kept me from that, but I found out that eating and drinking was really the fun thing. And then there was boys added in and all those things. And all that stuff was how I was coping with pain and loss, and all those things actually caused choices that created more pain and more loss. And so I can see that now. Of course, I couldn't see that then. And in recovery is where I started to connect more of the dots. Now, once I got the teen thing, I married my high school sweetheart. We started dating. Actually, he was out. We had known each other as friends, and I was a senior. And I have to say, he's a good man. He was the best choice I ever made. However, guess what? I married a son, a firstborn adult child of alcoholism. Both parents were alcoholics. And I didn't understand then that I had myself someone that would enable me and get the food that I would want later, right? And when I could not stop, and so that was how he would love me. Food. Let's see. I'm not going to go into all that with his parents, but it was not fun. I did not understand the alcoholic. We were like, that was a while back. It was 91. No, 92, something like that. And we actually did an intervention and it didn't work. They didn't want to change and we watched them die of alcoholism. But that was the first time I started looking at what that meant, right? I started hearing phrases from the big book. I started hearing people talk differently, and it sat with me. I was intrigued by it. I was trying to figure it out, right, so we could coexist with his parents. Anyways, the thing with my husband is that what fascinated me is he loved me no matter what. He loved me from 125 pounds when I was actually too thin to 450 pounds because it did catch up with me. I was fascinated by that because I felt like a failure. He saw a beautiful woman and I felt like a failure. He has always stood next to me and he always has helped take care of me. And he has learned he cannot give me the food that I would ask for anymore. During those years, those early years of having kids and all the stuff, I would gain a little bit of weight. Really, I was probably a good weight, but I would try all the things. I tried all the systems, the pay as you go, as they say, the gimmicks. I even tried to be more disciplined. I will never forget that as long as I live, that we were supposed to wait until you were hungry and stop when you were full. And that found me on the refrigerator floor as an adult, 30 something, or maybe even 40, laying on the floor crying because I didn't know when I was hungry and I didn't know when I was full. And I just wanted to eat and stop the feeling I had. Well, as you go through all that, and somewhere in there, I do find God and I do have a relationship with Him. Then I'm even more confused because I'm praying, right? I feel desperate. I don't understand why he's not helping me with that. And so it was a little confusing. In that time, my mom also got cancer and she passed away just short of 3 years. And I continued to eat. And her greatest thing when she was ill was that she was really worried about me. And rightly so, And after she passed, I gained even more. I ate my way through that pain. And I got to the place where I was stuck on the couch. I won't go all the way there, but it was really a hard period of time. And people surrounded me. I had all kinds of help. I look back now and I know God sent a rescue team in at that time, And gosh, you know what? There's nothing like being scared straight, right? when they tell you, like, lady, in 5 years you'll be dead, it wakes you up. And so I had somebody who was close to me who was actually a nurse practitioner that could have been a doctor. She had all the nutrition information. She taught me. She spent time with me. And my daughter married her son. So she would come and literally take care of me when they wanted to put me in the hospital. Instead, she stayed with me. That was really good. Here's the thing. No matter what they told me, no matter how scary that was, no matter how much my diabetic numbers went completely normal in reverse, all the good news I could give you, I could never stay off of the alcoholic foods like sugar or flour. It never lasted more than 3 years, sometimes more than 3 months. And every single time I went back to it, I could not understand it, and I was giving up hope. I've heard a lot of people talk about like this digging into your childhood thing. It's really not the reason why we eat, and we shouldn't do a lot of that. Well, for me, it helped heal some things, but they're correct. It really wasn't the issue, right? It was what I learned in the program, which I'm gonna at the end, I'm gonna give a list of here's this, this, and this, okay? So, anyways. At one point, I learned that I made a timeline of 48 places of loss, and I was not 50 years old yet. And so I kept saying, so I was eating to fill this hole. Well, yeah, but I had a food allergy. Wow, did the lights go on when I heard that? Anyway, in those years of looking back, deepened my relationship with God, so that was a good thing. What I guess I'm trying to do is encourage the person who's been on the journey for a while and they can't figure out why they're not getting it, but they're getting parts of it. You know, you're going to see it when
Halfway
you
through.
see it. Thank you. And you got to keep going. Keep going. Don't give up. While the things that I was healing from did not take me away from the compulsive relationship and addiction to certain foods, it was always a matter of time. However, it did cause me to go to the big book and visit an Al-Anon lesson. I have people in here. Not sure who's all in here, but there are women in here that took me because I wanted to understand it. Am I codependent? Do I have these issues? I went to Al-Anon. I went to a big book, open AA meeting, and I thought, well, there's my people. But I don't have a problem with alcohol. I didn't even drink it. I hadn't drank in years. But I started to connect the dots. But like every good compulsive overeater, we try to do it on our own. So I found myself a big book, and while they were digging into codependency, I was digging into that, and I was trying to do my own 12 steps. And I even found other 12-step recovery programs, and I would go into them. And I didn't remember that until this last time when I actually did all the steps. And when I went back and looked at everything I found, I was like, I never got past step four. And the woman that I did the 12 steps with this last time, 2 years ago, she kept saying, this is where people give up. And so I could actually see that looking back and didn't remember it. Like, talk about amnesia. And at the end of the day, yeah, I had to go through that. Okay. So this is where I want to bring in the hope part. I think we're at a good time. It's perfect. Okay. I was always looking for God, even when I didn't know him. And I didn't attend a church until I was 29 years old. I found some healing and freedom there, but not from the food for years, even though I had a relationship with him. It was very confusing. Then, when I was so desperate and without hope, I saw a recovery program advertised on Facebook, and I went into it. I didn't want to go to OA because I hadn't seen success like 20 years before that when I had met women in OA, and they didn't talk about the big book. And I'm not saying that that's true. I'm just saying that's what I thought in the moment, you know? And so I tried this other 12 step. It turns out she's from OA. But anyway, the whole thing, we went into that, and I got the gift of a sponsor there. I got the gift of the woman was a counselor, and I got the gift of a group of people that went through the 12 steps with me. And all those people led me to these rooms, gave me a good list of places to go and to listen and to learn and to not just listen and learn, but to do it. Encouragement, right? The counselor at the time when I was in there told me that you need to learn the tools. That's what you're missing. I didn't understand it. I was like, the tools and steps are the tools. Okay. And suddenly, about halfway through, I experienced one of those promises about the miracle. I had prayed for that miracle for years, and suddenly it was like my eyes were wide open and I could see clearly what was happening, and I no longer wanted to eat compulsively. It sounds like it happened the first time I did it, but remember what I just said? I had done it several times on my own with other people, and I never finished. And this time I went in desperate and willing. So those are the keys to me. That promise of the miracle, I wish I had it written down. If anybody wants to put it in the chat, I can't remember where it's at right now. But that promise of the miracle was big for me. And it's that neutrality, you know? And I remember saying in that group, and there's a couple of ladies in here right now, remember it, when I looked and I was crying and I said, I want what you have. Because it was the first time I saw other people that actually had food neutrality. And I told the counselor that I said, I want what you have. I want to be able to walk by the, what do you call it, the table of treats in Narnia. You know what I'm talking about? And I want to be able to like walk by that and not be affected. And she said, oh, you could be affected, but you can walk by. Like it won't, it'll bounce off, you know? And the day that that started happening for me, I was literally walking through the house and I was singing, I can see clearly now the rain is gone. All of a sudden, it was like everything was wide open. Does it mean I live every day like that now, 2 years later? No, it's not always happy, happy, joy, joy. But it was a beautiful spot, and I do have a clarity still, and I still am abstinent. I have not lost all the weight, but I'm in a process, and I just have to be okay with that. So if you've noticed, I'm not focusing my talk on how much weight I lost. I can't. That was not good for me. I had to focus. I had to put all that aside and learn this and what was most important. So I'll read my list and I'll finish up. We got 9 minutes, right? Okay. So here's what I learned in the big book. I have a food allergy. Yes, like I said earlier, wow. As a woman with many allergies and asthma since I was 2 years old, that shifted my thinking. Suddenly, it wasn't about me being like I couldn't do it, right? I didn't develop a food addiction because I wanted to eat myself to death. That was never the issue, was it? It was in me, and I needed help in avoiding those alcoholic foods, like I had learned about the allergies in my life, and the solution was here. And so, the day that I read the place in the big book where it talked about being agitated and disturbed, and that's the other one I wanted to look up. I wish somebody put that in the chat. My sponsor's in here right now, and I was like, what? Like, no, I never wanted comfort food, but suddenly I understood that language. I read the big book and I go, it's me. And I was agitated and disturbed, so I learned how to soothe. I would call it soothe, like calm the beast. And although I want to say this really clear, when you're in the process of it, I didn't understand. And I cried and I thought, you know, well, I can see clearly now the rain is gone, but why do I want to kill my husband? He didn't even do anything. Like, he's a good guy. And I was so agitated. And she looked in the camera and she said, well, Pamela Joy, this is probably the first time in your life that you've coped with life without eating something to soothe, right? That agitated and disturbed state was what she was trying to get me to see, and I finally got that. So I held on to that a lot. That was important to me because I am like those people in the book. I get it. I'm getting it more and more all the time. Okay, I learned that when I was, oh, I said that already. I wasn't nice when I was, that's what I wrote in the food anymore. Here I am. So the keys are in the steps. Being willing is crucial. Willing to do whatever you're asked to do. Willingness unlocks so much. Our ways did not get us to a good place. I surrendered everything when I walked into the door of that program that day and said, I will do whatever you tell me to do. I haven't got, I could be smart about a lot of things, but this isn't about smart. This is about not my power, but his, right? Here we are. This is not my strength, it's his. So, anyway, you have to do more than talk about it. You have to do the work. You have to live it. You have to experience it. And experiencing the promises comes from experiencing the steps. Honesty is truly the thing that will take off masks. It opens you up to humility. It removed all the false narratives that I used to make myself look better than I was. So this is a program of learning to release far more than weight. Releasing the resentments that we nurse, the control of directing our own lives, and genuinely thinking about others over our own selfish nature is what keeps us out of the food. Most importantly, it's the honest relationship that we have with God on a daily level. Living in steps 10, 11, and 12 is crucial. We can't pass it up. We can't just do the steps and think we've arrived. It's every single day for the rest of your life. It is what it is. Most importantly, I said that, okay, it's the honest relationship, it's the powerlessness. We have to understand that it's only in His strength that life is manageable. And being spiritually fit keeps us clean and honest, and all of that's out of the big book. Step 11 truly is a daily event. I wrote down pages 99 to 100. Do I have time? Yep. Okay, because I'm at the end now. There's two things to read, basically. So on pages 99 and 100, what did I just read? Step 11 is a daily event. I don't know what I. Oh, Lord, not this. Oh, here. It's on 100. Okay. We're supposed to remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It's dependent upon his relationship with God. We've all seen, people get well, men whose families have not returned at all. We've all seen others slip when the family came back too soon. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were far better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So that was that one. And step 10 is also critical daily. It's what helped me keep my emotions under control, remember? Right. So if I'm dealing with the resentments and dealing with the things that have tripped me up, if I actually deal with them and let go and surrender them and work through them, then my emotions aren't everywhere. It takes time, though. We have to keep our side of the street clean. We have to forgive. And lastly, it's step 12. I recently told my first group that I ever did the steps fully with that I realize now I cannot do this alone. Even if I want to, because I still want to. I'm not gonna lie. I look back at 2 years and 2 months of abstinence as a gift. I no longer white knuckle it. I have to stay connected to God and others, and the connection and the lifeline of those that we live our steps out, like our tribe, right? It's critical. And then we have to share it. And I'm gonna close with this. Anybody who knows me, I made it under the 30 minutes. Let's say God did that. Page 152 and 153. Here it is. It's in a vision for you. And I'm going to start with right here. So here. Okay, we have shown how we got from under, out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without the food, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's the fellowship in OA, we'll say. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You're going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in sinking ships, food addicts. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are the future fellows of OA. Among them, you will make lifelong friends, and you will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together. Come on, it's so good. And you will commence shoulder to shoulder in your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself, to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. It's that, the rescue. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened amongst us, they can happen with you. Should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. And that's that.
Thank you so much, Pamela Joy. You said it was your first time